So it's easy to forget.
We covered that.
Hi.
Oh, that's probably hot sake is
wrong. Saw the Dracula movie today.
Yeah, was it good?
Rockin'.
You too.
So there any bloodletting?
Just enough. In all the right places.
We spend a lot of time with, like, blood,
you know.
Then I'm gonna dice out the colors.
Ooh, I'd be
scared.
But it was like a slaughter
dropped
up in blood.
So is it like
modern Dracula? Where's what's the
input of night?
How
was it gratuitous?
It's an origin story.
Oh, okay. My favorite.
That is your favorite, isn't that what you said? I only like to see where the superheroes come from, and then
yeah,
I'm done.
Then I'm done.
Batman Begins.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it was a love story, at least on two levels. One was the prince's love for his beloved wife, son, and kingdom. That was one of the principal loves that motivated him to do what he did. The other love was a stranger, more dangerous love. And that was the love of the prince for the vampire that made him. Yeah. That was a bold, fearless move. That the prince, in his anguish over losing his kingdom and his son to the Turks, sought the beast out, the beast who lived in the cave, that took lives with ease. So rather than running from him, he sought him out a second time after the first encounter nearly killed him. So he went to the beast deliberately out of his human anguish to find sufficient power of transmutation to protect his interests, his first love, right? But in encountering the beast that had the power to transform him, he had to face everything that he was. Because the deal that was made is that by taking on that power, there would be a transmutation that he might not ever be able to return from. And so the beast, his mentor, his teacher and friend, put the cards on the table and told him what the deal was all about. And he went for it. It was voluntary. He was tested to remain there, then given the gift and took the gift. So it was, in that way, not a violent imposition, right, upon him. Yeah. In that way, it was stepping up to the plate for a beyond noble and perennial wish for transmutation, kind of like what the yoga of radiant presence is about, or the way that we fools come together and chat about inquiry into awakening, right? Like Kane from that old kung fu movie, right? Had to snatch the coin from his master's hand, and when he had matured enough to do so, he was thrown out of the monastery, right, into the world. So we see this wonderful theme of a kind of a love, a kind of a honoring and cherishing and surrender in taking a profound risk. Yes? A profound risk for entering into the one-way lair, the kingdom of transmutation. That's how realization goes down. That's how I've had the privilege of seeing it exposed to me since, you know, early years of my life. Yeah, baby. So what does that transmutation look like, right? How does it show up in the beauty of your life, in the madness and the chill and the uncertainty of your life? This poignant, will not let you go adventure of transmutation, which invites you out of the human realm. Right? You're not in this to get a better parking spot or anything of a material nature, right? You're not pulling the strings on the secret so that you can get something that may benefit you somehow, right? An adornment of some kind. No, you're in this because you thirst, as did Dracula, for a magic potion. In his case, you could say it was blood, but in your case, it's something perhaps more refined.
Don't speak on my behalf.
In your case, it may be blood. So that's it. That's the thirst. That any of us in the room were interested or had this thirst from as early as we could remember is also the magical gift of this thirst and the quenching of that thirst, however that may appear in your life, in your experience, the quenching of that thirst, the actual transmutation from going to the cave of the beast and saying, yeah, take me, take it all. What could possibly prepare you for it? You know, in that relationship, and that relationship, of course, is between you and you, right? You and this already divine presence, unencumbered presence. That's the relationship. So what's at risk for you? What do you give up? So much of the seeking that happens is just a bizarre lament of accumulation, right? But no. When you enter into this path, you go through these doors, a different kind of demand is placed upon you. That demand is the one of giving away, giving yourself away. That's a different doorway, giving yourself away. So even if you look at the brilliant exposition that my dear master has shared over the years, referred to as noticing, right? What is noticing? Is it an accumulation of, call it extrasensory or extra special experience? It can be that. Why not? Like anything that glitters, why shouldn't that appear in your consciousness? But it's also, I would say, more poignantly, more dangerously, a giving away. You give away of the imaginary continuity of self so that you can dwell in the thrill, the enjoyment, the novelty of noticing, of seeing that consciousness in its present iteration is nothing but a dissolving, shifting sand. How on earth or elsewhere are you going to be able to demand that one is the consequence of or the possessor of an ego if the heart of your attention sees that the present moment is nothing other than a radiantly dissolving sand? That's noticing. It's not a thing that one does. It's liberation itself. It's the liberation, realization of liberation itself, the ambiguous uncertainty and beatitude of absolute dissolving. Here you are. Here this is. This is the, these, you could say, the words are my fumbling way of interpreting the gift that was offered to me, the gift that was shown to me, and whatever crazy courage I may or may not have had to say, yes, yes, I believe you, yes, yes, I see, yes, 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 I feel this. I'll take it on. I'll take on that mantle to the best of my ability. Right? You pass through this door by taking a knee, right? Now, it may look like you've taken a knee to a master, to a teacher, to a blessing, right? To a holographic invitation. But you also take a knee to yourself, to your own ideas, to inhabiting a quality of dispassion, which is miraculous and has no measure. Yes, you inhabit a depth of dispassion which has no measure. That's what you're drinking. That's the blood. Yeah. It's just this. Well, I mean, one could say these same kinds of, rich, red, oxygenated metaphors were also in the life and the crucifixion of Jesus, right? I think so. I see them there. I may be alone. Yeah, so that's just enough. I just felt like that would be a way of saying hello, welcome. Yeah. And anyone wishes to share or open a question, or Pat, if there's anything you wish to throw in the circle, please don't hesitate.
I texted Jeff and I told him I woke up yesterday, so whatever that means. But I had a question about... So it seems as though you can be, like, focused in, like, real tight on something, or you can be way back. And in the way back, I mean, I'm experiencing a disengagement that is sort of calling me, like you were saying, to come and not return something. It's like pulling me to a total detachment of, like, because everything is irrelevant. And it's almost like you can go down that road. and then just don't give a shit about anything that's appearing. So I find myself going into a tiny little spot, specifically, what could be a leaf falling, or into that other place, and I, it just happens. And then I'm like, I get, like, disoriented. I'm kind of curious about, I'm actually, like, a little bit worried about the feeling of being disoriented. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's possible. Like, everything is just really totally irrelevant. And, like, you can go there. So that's it.
Organizes itself is we're all very familiar with, in that there's any degree of focus that seems to present itself. You can be zoomed in on things, you can be orienting to systems, you can be up here, we are in a circle and we're a group and we're sharing, or, oh, there's just this weird patterns and colors and it's all disconnected, you know, whatever. Or, oh, it's just like, nothing, everything, weirdness, whatever. And so there's all, you know, there's no limit to sort of, to you could call it, I guess, ways of focusing, ways of engaging. And from each different perspective, the implications are very, very different. But none of the implications that seem to be implicit in any particular viewpoint are actually true. Or let's say are actually complete. Nothing is not true. You could say more basically everything is true, even if it's contradictory. Now, so orientation always happens within a particular framework of focus. So if you're focused in within a certain, if you focus with your experience from a certain perspective, let's say, or a seemingly certain perspective, that implies a certain kind of an organization, of a about what was the word we were just using? Ordering, relationship, making things make sense, having things be relevant. What was it you said? How when you zoom out, nothing is.
It's completely irrelevant.
Yeah.
Everything.
Well, yeah, everything is irrelevant, but that doesn't negate the seeming relevancy that occurs with different levels of focus. Is what that irrelevance looks like from different perspectives. Mm-hmm. And zoomed out is not any truer or less true than zoomed in. So it's disorienting. That's the word you were using.
Yeah.
It's intrinsically, it's all disoriented. There is no true orientation. There's all of these partial orientations that are implied by various degrees of focus. Okay?
Well, I feel like I have a place. If I'm focused, there's a place.
Well, sure, of course.
But if I'm not focused, there's no place.
Right. And they're both true. When you focus, then there's a place. When you're not, it's like when you focus, you're playing a game. When you're playing Monopoly, there's a place for you, and the place is implicit in the rules of Monopoly. But then you get up and leave the game, and all of a sudden, all of that just recedes in relevance. Mm-hmm. You know, it's there, and you can go back to it if you want. And all of a sudden, you know, those rules are in place. But then you leave, and it's not. And you go out into a night sky and look up, and it's not. You go to sleep, and you're in deep sleep, and it's not. And so there's all these different, let's say, apparent perspectives or apparent presentations of what your reality can appear to be, and they each have very different implications of organization or of relevance or of you know, how you orient to it. And none of them are untrue. Mm-hmm. But none of them are true, and more importantly, the main thing is there's no hierarchy. There's not like any one of them is more fundamentally true than the other. When you zoom out and it's all just like, wow, that's not actually any more or less true than when you zoomed in and it's all
like
very intimate.
To me, it feels like a pool, and I don't like it. The zooming out is a little uncomfortable.
Okay, in what way?
I feel completely like there's no volition anymore.
Right. Okay.
Well, that makes me uncomfortable. In some
What's
level.
Uncomfortable about it? What'd you say?
Well, because I lose track of time and I can't.
Right.
I don't really know what the hell I was doing anymore.
Right.
That isn't really. That could be a problem. Like if I'm cooking something or. You know?
Okay.
So I actually went. I mean, I forget what I'm doing. And I sit there and I'm like, And then 10 minutes goes by. I'm having problems.
Well, that can happen. I mean,
doing the shit I usually do.
Yeah, different functionalities come with certain different implicit kinds of degrees of focus. If you're cooking and all of a sudden you just space out utterly and everything's gone, then the cooking's gone and nothing's gone, and it may or may not happen, depending on what your body does in the interim. Right. And so, you know, certain kinds of functionality require that. On the other hand, the idea that one functionality is particularly important over another, like it's, gosh, if I forget, you know, if I really lose it, I'm not going to be able to talk to people. So you can't talk to people. So what? You know, but talking to people is important. Okay, talking to people is important from certain frame of reference. From other frames of reference, who gives a shit?
Mm-hmm.
And none of those frames of reference are truer than the others. So it's really a matter of letting go into trusting your own nature, trusting your own it's called trajectory.
It involves the idea of time, but probably I'm not acclimated.
Yeah. Well, time is very slippery, and you know, all of unfolding consists essentially of acclimation, and it's basically acclimation to multidimensionality, acclimation to the fact that this is very different from itself in radical, fundamental ways, and we're, you know, when we're naive, we have a simplistic idea that everything's a certain way and it all makes sense more or less, or not. But anyway, you know, things are kind of a certain way and you kind of work with that. And unfoldment reveals that that's not really true. Unfoldment reveals that other ways things are too. And these other ways may not be compatible or make sense in any way with these other ways that things are. And so, and then you discover the more perplexing fact that there's even other ways, and then more others, and more others, and more others. And all of these other ways may or may not have anything to do with each other, may or may not have any correlation, and may or may not have any functionality correlation, or they may not. They may not get in each other's way at all. You may have some perspective that's extremely spaced out, that doesn't inhibit your functionality at all, and your body's just able to sleepwalk through things or whatever. I mean, who knows, right? Mm-hmm. You just find it for yourself.
I think I had, like, experienced something like that prior, which I just, like, I don't know.
But anyway, no one or other of these experiences are particularly important. What's really important is letting go into the equal reality of all of them and the equal relevancy of all of them and into the multidimensionality of your experience.
I don't think I have a choice.
Well, none of us have a choice. It's not a matter of choice.
Yeah. But I guess I could...
But it's kind of, I mean, it can be kind of relieving to know that things don't need to make sense. Things don't need to even work. And working from one perspective may look like not working from another perspective and vice versa.
Yeah.
So, and it can be a mess. You know, it can not make sense. It can be not compatible with itself. And if so, so. Mm-hmm.
The discomfort can also be on account of having been accustomed to thinking, believing that there's predictability and that you have any control.
Well, always the discomfort
and
is
so
the discomfort of being forced forced away from a comfortable perspective that you think you have a handle on.
Well, it's like after a few minutes or whatever, and I'm like, it was. I don't know how to describe it. I felt as though I was out of control.
Sure.
So,
are you ever in control?
No, I'm not, but...
Never.
But I... yeah. It's not the same thing. Yeah. I mean, if I would have said I'm not in control, it would have been on the intellectual level. You know what I mean? More so than, I mean, I would know that, but this is different. This is like threatening.
But what does it threaten?
It doesn't matter. That's what, why it's like, it's an absolute, it's everything. So it, can obliterate.
What can it obliterate?
Any connection to anything.
Okay, but what makes, if it can obliterate any connection to anything, was there ever any connection to anything?
I know. Well, obviously not, or I'm just psychopath. I mean, Is that the word? Psychopath is just a qualification.
That doesn't mean anything.
Never ask a psychopath if you're a psychopath.
I know. What was your original question? Do you remember?
I know.
Oh, what you found threatening, or what
threatening.
you felt you were threatened, or you were in danger of losing.
I guess
whatever.
There's a remnant of what I'm willing to give. I assume.
Do you have what it is? Do you have a choice? Do you get to choose this world or that world?
It doesn't really matter if I have a choice or not.
If you have a choice, you can exercise the choice.
My thought is what I guess I was experiencing. I guess the thought that this may be too much.
Oh, but that's just a thought.
Right. But I, you know how that is.
You know how the vampire thing works?
I didn't realize it.
So the vampire thing is not just a single initiation, is it? Right. Once you go through that one window, what do you have? One initiation after another, after another, after another. I mean, each moment then becomes an encounter with something that you're not in control of, right? That you surrender entirely to, that you give yourself away to. So whatever fear you or any of us may be experiencing has to be the reflection of some kind of withholding, right? So if you're withholding, then you're not giving yourself away, are you? I'm not picking on you, but if there's withholding, then one is not giving oneself away. Having passed through the door, you have nothing left between now and the day that you die for one initiation after another. And with each encounter, you have only one privilege to play. Give yourself away.
Yeah, I don't know what the feeling was exactly, or I assume I had a thought associated with it.
Well, it's a feeling. Threatening is not just a simple thought. Feeling threatened is a sense of a dread of loss, a clinging or something.
I guess, probably I say I'm not sure because I didn't think it through at the time. Like, I'm not sure, but my assumption would be that I have to, that's what it is, what he just said, that's what it was, it just came to me. I have to determine if I want to make it so there's no return. So it was actually,
Do you have a choice?
Was exactly speaking to exactly what I was experiencing, which is, are you prepared to not return? I think.
What would you return? What would you return?
The self, I guess.
What's the idea of returning or not returning? What would return? What would it return to?
Connections.
And what would it not return?
Connections. That's probably the best I can come up with.
What?
You mean, are you ready to give it up? Is that what you're saying?
Like all that I had known, everything.
But if you have to. No.
All that I had experienced or believed.
Well.
But you find that you don't, that there was nothing that was permanent to give up. If the clarity is.
I understand that now, but. It still could be a thought that arises. You know what I mean?
Anyway, the good news is it all takes care of
itself.
It's
not going on now, whatever it was or is. Thank you.
Jeff, you mentioned a giving up, and my experience has been more like a, I guess, stripping away based on circumstances and events, like just pretty steadily having everything I thought I was tossed up in my face, and I'm not that anymore.
Yeah, you're lucky. So that's the non-volitional view, right? Now, one suggests maybe something that hints at volition, which of course it's not. And the other is you're just the gleefully unworthy recipient of your own dissolution.
I wouldn't say gleeful. It's been pretty painful.
Oops. Well, you're not alone in that.
And it seems to be primarily centered around relationships.
Why not?
You know, who I thought I was 2 years ago, I don't even remotely hold on to any of that.
Well, yeah, I mean, 2 years ago is kind of a myth. And who is a myth, right? And that you could have even been something 2 years ago is another wonderful myth. I mean, it's the myth of you, so it's lovely in all respects, but it's still a fucking myth.
That you have the mental capacity to actually process anything.
Well, it seems to me that a change in you just doesn't, I don't know, that just doesn't, if there's one thing that's not changing, it's me, you know. It's not like I'm not changing. I don't feel like I'm changing. I feel like all these attributes of me are changing like crazy. But I don't see me as changing. I would have to think that's true universally.
Experiencing is strange, right? So you're referring to the persistent nature of it.
Yeah.
So, and you call that for now, which is great, me, right? The persistent nature that this is so can easily be felt or articulated as me. That's the persistent nature, this persistent side. And then there's the other side, which is the, right,
it's always
constant come and go, the impermanence
the
of all experiencing.
Extreme anxieties and stuff like that.
Yes.
And then the more blissful states and,
right,
and all that stuff.
So that even this moment, right, it's not here. Oh, this one, which one? What are you talking about? This one? Oh, this one. But wait, whoa. Right, so it's just pure dissolve, and yet it has a peculiar persistence. We can identify momentarily, maybe a thousand different ways in each moment that, oh, is this persistent or not persistent? Is it dissolving? Is it real? Is it me? Is it not me? Does it have attributes? Is it completely without quality? Am I here? Am I not here? Is there time? What's happening exactly right now? What now? What are you talking about? And that's how strange, right, the articulation of present experience is. Just, oh, gone. You can't, and even saying it's gone is strange, because that would suggest it was even here long enough to be gone. But it's not even here long enough to be gone. So is this now or not now? When? What are you for? Now? But, well, wait. I mean, that's how curious, right, present experiencing is. It's not really here, but it's not here. Did it show up and now it's gone? Well, I'm too late. I'm already talking about something that's, well, what about now? Right? So that's the impermanent view, which is clear. And yet it's persistent that this is ongoingly dissolving. That's the best we can say about it, is still persists. Like, oh, shit, well, what do I identify with? The cogent me or that which is disappearing?
And this experiencing, whether it's here right now or whether it's right now in a sleeping dream that I recall as I wake up, it all feels sort of the same, in a sense. You know, this whole experience trip. Now, that when I go through angst and anxiety because of my job, mostly, well, you know, that has a whole different tone to it, more of a gripping around my neck type of tone.
You're a Rembrandt. You can paint your experience in a million ways, and they're all beautiful.
But, you know, they're all a bit of different feeling, but, like, this thing, I've been into the dream thing because I think of this 5-HTP I'm taking. But, I mean, that helps. But it's just remarkable I don't want to call it real, but I mean, it feels as real as anything. Or everything feels as unreal as that. You know.
It's not that difficult to see that in the midst of something that is persistent yet remarkably evaporating, about which we can't really say anything cogent, it's hard to express ourselves and take, you know, even the most sincere position on our present experience or our awakening experience, whether it happened a minute ago or yesterday, whether I'm withholding or not. Everything is like, what? You got to be kidding me. How'd you come up with that? I mean, that was true yesterday, but even talking about it today, it doesn't have the same quality of truth that you thought it had yesterday. So all we can really do is fumble about when we're in conversation, because we can't really be referring to anything.
And we sort of change reality when we converse, I think, you know? Because
no question.
We create another, I don't know what the word would mean.
How did you get to be a Republican?
What's that?
You're a Republican.
What did you say?
You just insulted me.
I'm a Republican.
Burn
really.
At the stake.
The wolf will enter.
the Night Sky Sangha, where you could be accused of being a Republican.
Not a Christian Republican.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you said,
language changes reality, right? So I use the word Republican and reality bent, right, for as long as it bent. That's what we're, right, isn't that what we're doing? Come up with any word that you like. Insult somebody, say something lovely about them, be sincere about it, or even lie, and reality is bending before your very nose, isn't it? And the shit that you say about yourself is also a reality bending, because it comes into, call it, you know, an aspiration or a form or a respiration that we call thought or association or identification. And then all of a sudden you've created a universe that you believe you're occupying as a legitimate reality. And you are, at best, an illegitimate reality. From moment to moment. Like as in, well, this is good. We can, you know, navigate, negotiate, have repartee that addresses everyone's lovely first-hand experience of whatever they feel like is going on. But we know that that's kind of an unreality, because what exactly is it that's going on? Something happened to you a moment before now? You really want to, you know, put that on a shield or let's say a couple of tablets and say, yeah, it's this way for me. I'm like, you got to be kidding. No, it's not.
Well, what's nice about it is nobody gives a shit if it is or it isn't. So you can say anything you want. Whatever.
Everyone is kind of happily or miserably immersed in their own, you know, isolated fantasy. We listen to each other, it appears, out of a certain kind of political courtesy, but no one really gives a fuck what anyone says, not 2 minutes or 30 seconds after it's said. So if we're sharing anything through the fumbling of words, it's, I don't know, the curious gift of hanging out. We're having a kind of a love fest. But in a very democratic way.
Well, you know, some things are more sticky than others. Like, I acknowledge that there are some things that have a lasting impression, or it appear to have a lasting impression.
Yeah.
And others that I wish didn't, not even for a half a second.
Yeah, of course.
And they're both curious at times.
It's always that. I mean, the soup of consciousness, the roiling, simmering reduction sauce of consciousness is doing what it does. It places emphasis on its own imagination from moment to moment. You're not in control of the emphasis, not the subject, not the object, not the consequence, not the degree of interest. Nothing. You're not in control of any of it. It's doing it itself completely. But it doesn't mean that you have to be the purchaser of the dendritus of the movement of consciousness.
So who's deciding how invested or not?
There is no who. You can't anthropomorphize it. Even just speaking of it, of course, is just kind of a poetic, right, inclination. I'm not saying something's, suggesting something's true. So there's not even a reason. Not that I don't respect the reason to say who. Where's the who? How could there possibly be a who?
Horton.
Yeah, Horton is the best answer we've got. Horton is good. I mean, there's no volume control. There's no real attenuation control that you have on the nature of present experience. Though you can skillfully exercise all kind of meticulous, say, involvement, engagement with your present experience. So you might be in front of a panel of 1,000 knobs, but someday you may have not a single finger to turn any of those knobs. And it's both, right, at any moment, because this is so dynamically so, however it's so, that you can engage with it. You're not completely docile, but your engagement with it may not be the same quality of expressing personal will or, right, seeking outcome. And so the knobs in your fingers both can just completely disappear. There's no knobs and there's no fingers. There's no attenuation. And this is doing itself exactly as it's doing itself. And when did you become interested? Who invited you to the party?
It's like that recurring dream where you're trying to steer a car and it's not listening at all, whether to go left or right, then you let go, and it seems to work out, but it's not by your account. That's happened in a few dreams.
Yeah.
Even the one time it didn't
right.
end up in a ditch.
That's right. The gift of letting go, coming forth in a dream.
This is the outer limits.
Well, think of your biology. From that, like right now, you're, let's call it, alive, right? Alive is life. It's sentient, irrefutable. Shit's happening. Maybe even a radiant presence, if you like the way that sounds. I do. Or something stranger, a metaphor of your own making. Hello, this is fucking irrefutable. What is it? I don't fucking know.
Hello, this is fucking irrefutable.
Style, I can tell.
Yeah.
You know.
Hey, here I am.
Pick the metaphor du jour. Hello, this is fucked. Oh, yeah, hi.
Oh, yeah, hi.
Can you see that perhaps, or feel that perhaps, this can be joyful beyond imagination, but not as the consequence of anything? Would that be strange if whatever this is or isn't revealed itself to itself in the way that it knows best and says, holy shit?
Well, yeah, along those lines, but totally opposite.
That's why we count on you.
I've had, you know, just the slightest of encounters with somebody I've known. I only know a little bit, but the Facebook encounters. But I know enough to know that he's really, like, over the top, over the edge. I mean, he's suicidal. He's pretty delusional, probably psychotic, whatever. But
this is like a close friend of yours or yourself?
He's talking about me.
Yeah. Or someone else in the room.
I won't say who it is, but they're in the room
really?
Right now.
Sounds like we're playing Clue.
Yeah, that's like, who could it be?
Jamie with the candlestick in the children's room.
But he's... his whole two meaningful ideas about life are set theory and some other mathematical thing. It starts with this.
Oh, you got one of those guys. You got a Russell Crowe on your hands.
Well, he only, I believe, only sees things mechanistically. And, I mean, he sees no soul in anything, from what I can get.
God, let's take a workshop from him.
Oh, good Lord. We'll all be suicidal. You know. But
I'll get the black sneakers. You get the silver dollars. Someone else get the orange juice.
But, you know,
we'll work this out.
It's sort of interesting, though, because it's almost like a negative proof or something like that. It's like you look at somebody like that, and it's like you could say a lot of the same things that we may say. But what he's left with is a gnawing nothingness that's driving him nuts.
Sorry to hear that. Sounds like he could use a beer.
Yeah, he needs something.
I don't know what it is, right? There's a certain solvent, maybe, that's just not in his karmic field,
yeah,
that through this same avenue of revelation, instead of being lit, relaxed, mm-hmm, right, transmutative, with it, surrendered to it. It's a grating impossibility for his psyche, and so suicide, you could say, would make compassionate sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because if this doesn't have enough solvent along with it, you know, if there's not enough fatty tissue in your spine as the kundalini pushes its way, mm-hmm, to your crown chakra, you're going to fucking kill yourself. That would be the smart thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't design this shit.
Because the self is going to die. I mean, if that's what he's experiencing his death as self, perhaps. I mean, and it's death.
That's why you get a ticket to see the master, because your self's going to die. Here's the ticket. Are you going to use it?
He just doesn't see anything else other than this need for confirmation. I'm just sort of making this up.
Why is he relevant to you, really?
Oh,
yeah.
Thank you.
She's not really. I mean,
thank you. Done. Really. I love you. You know that. If the guy's not relevant to you, it's fucking done.
I'm not trying to save him or anything. I don't
know.
I'm
curious.
How to do it. Yeah.
You're curious?
Well, yeah. I'm curious about people because, you know, the same thing like with Richard Dawkins and people like that, you know. It's like, at least they seem to be happy in life, relatively speaking. This guy is totally bonkers and depressed, but there are people that seem to just negate.
But yes, but I know, but reporting on people that seem to do one thing or another.
It's a reflection of
it's a reflection of you, your interest, your comic book. That's why I asked.
Sure.
What's the relevance of it?
I would like to bring up a question then. That might make that relevant.
Yeah, take it.
Because.
Really? Turn the heat this way.
Because bonkers and depressed is really irrelevant, just as much as skipping through the roses with Daisy.
That's right. That's right.
However it goes.
Where do you live?
I like that better.
Where do you live? Fucking here. When do you live? Fucking now. You tell me what's relevant.
But I mean, because people who write dark things.
Yes, people who write dark things.
Are deeply passionate.
Yeah, but you're just making shit up about, you know, people that are not here or present.
Well, I'm just saying, to put a value on this versus
put
this.
A value on what? You create value, then you are doomed.
That's my point.
Okay, thank
That's
you.
The point.
Stop creating value.
He's speaking it as though it's a negative thing. That's
Well, listen, it's a deferral mechanism, right?
Come from.
It's a deferral mechanism. You start creating values about hypothetical situations of people that you may know, you know, surreptitiously or informally through the internet. It's a deferral mechanism for the sustenance of your own imagination. That's what it is. And I'm not putting it down. I'm good at it. I'm as good as it is the next person. But that's all it is.
Well, and the whole world is going through that.
Fuck the world. But who cares about the whole world? The whole world's batshit. It's always been batshit. We're alive, if we're alive, by the grace of the miraculous divine, to whom that doesn't answer to us.
But we have to listen to the batshit.
Did he say batshit?
And they're going to shove it down your throat.
Guano. Yes, the title of this evening's meeting is Guano, at the door. Yeah.
I'm batshit.
We know you are batshit. That's why you're loved. It really is a question of relevancy. If you create relevancy out of, you know, surreptitious interpretations or bizarre interpretations of what's occurring in your present experience, you're welcome to do so. That's an imagination field. I'm down with it. But part of what we do here, or why we do what we do here, is to confront, right, the genesis of the imagination field. It's hard work. I know that.
It's
loving, but hard work.
When there's astounding curiosities, let's say.
Yeah.
You know,
yours?
Well, my curiosity about his sorry state of affairs.
Oh, God. Yeah, okay. You have a curiosity about his sorry state of affairs.
Let's say mine. Let's say my sorry state of affairs when you go in that direction.
That's relevant. Yeah, that's relevant. Your sorry state of affairs is relevant. Do you have one? Do you have a sorry state of affairs?
Sure.
Okay. Thank you. You realize I'm not interested in hearing about it.
Yeah, that's
nor do I expect you to be interested in my sorry state of affairs. Right? Yeah. Okay. See, what's relevant, if anything's relevant, is that if there's alive, and this is alive, this is what's relevant. Anything else is a concomitant imagination. I'm not putting imagination down or saying that you should stop imagining things. Yes? But the work that we're doing for the short time we're together is, hey, this is an opportunity for me to hang out absolutely in the face of imagination and not fall into the trap of the genesis of me. That's what we do a couple of times a week. That's the invitation, right? The other stuff we can do, you know, smoking some puffy in the parking lot and going to see an Eagles tribute band.
Is that going to happen?
I hope so. Yeah, but that's right. So you have yourself, right? You are yourself, meaning that this irrefutability is so. You have this, you are this. This is what's so for you. This is the beaming, incredible, right, fractal realization of your present experience.
Yeah.
You can turn it into anything, in a manner of speaking, imaginarily. You can't necessarily put on a spacesuit and start walking around on Mars, but you could try, right? So it's not where you are.
No desire to do.
No.
Such.
The revelation of what this is or isn't, right, can eradicate what we might call, right, some kind of desire for other, elsewhere, relevance.
Well, it seems to me that whole there's no causality thing. We act like there is, so there is.
Yes, yes. Okay. No question. We act like there is, so there is.
Yeah.
I mean, to pound an idea that says, well, there's no causality, mm-hmm. when there's so much evidence for the appearance and the experience or the confidence on causality would be foolish. Right? So, okay, there's causality. Rock and roll.
Well,
what do you do with it?
I don't know.
Nothing.
It just came to me this week. I had to bring it up.
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, for fun, anything that we imagine presently or have the interest, the inspiration, the cojones to say because it makes sense for this moment is okay. You could say true for this moment. It's the identification du jour. It doesn't mean that it means anything. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that your present experience needs to mutate into anything relevant a moment from now. That's bizarre, right? Because the typical way our consciousness works is that we insist on the best shot at present relevancy so that we can get the best shot at future relevancy. That's what it feels like. That's what it sounds like. But what if it weren't true? What if you were off the hook, as in right now, for all and any relevancy? Mm-hmm. That's fucked up. But Pat, that is the confrontation. That is the confrontation. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the hands of some, it could be smooth and kind of secretive, and the rug gets pulled out of you without you even noticing it, right? And sometimes it's a little more abrupt, it's a little more demonstrative, right?
Like a disciplined and or was or appeared to be whatever previously disciplined, calculated priorities, values. This goes here.
Those can all remain.
We do this. We do that. We do this. And now I'm like, ah!
Those can all remain if it's there. You could say karma, right, to assert themselves in your experience.
That's what I'm feeling is threatened, maybe. Maybe with my sort of, what's the word, like recipe.
Your recipe, yes.
My recipe for life is like, shuffled.
Completely.
Running it all over the place.
Completely. Well, the recipe was imagined, right? The recipe was compensatory. Mm-hmm. The recipe was the consequence of or the same as a flower arrangement of belief. When did that belief begin? When you were conceived, when you were born at 2 years old, throughout your so-called life? All of that's been imaginary, right? The movement, the functioning of belief and experience and identification and suffering, the lack of suffering, the decisions that were made, the entirety of what you call your life is, right? It's a flower arrangement. Yeah, and all the compensations that you may have adopted consciously, unconsciously, deliberately, as a result of trauma or as the result of a good LSD experience were also profoundly arbitrary. And where did they evaporate? Here. That's fun. The entirety of you, your life, and the compensatory mechanisms that you held dear so that you could make that life ideal, where do they evaporate? Well, how about right here? How about right now?
Mm-hmm. You could say equally the imagination will assert itself and reinforce some construct of curiosity and interest.
You can bet on it.
Or dread.
Take that to the track. You'll be a winner each time. You'll pull down the trifecta, yeah. But see, even that, let's say it does. Like you said, right? Does it have relevancy? Does it have this? If I believe it does, then it does. Well, let's say it does. And so what? You see, there's no result of any confidence that you place in anything. Whether it's the materialist view, the atheist view, the yoga of radiant present view, right? No matter where you place your confidence from moment to moment, it's only referential, it's only representational, it's only an ideology. Very, very short-lived.
Mm-hmm.
And but still, there's this beautiful persistence. Here's the persistence. I don't know what this is. Why even have a single idea about it? Or if I have a million ideas about it, why do anything about any of them? Even in the presence of ideas, where's the relevancy? Where's the take-home pay? You're punched out forever. You're off the clock.
Do you feel like your ability to keep it together is the fear?
I am somewhat disconcerted. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. You know?
Oh, yeah. Well, here, show of hands. Who knows what they're doing?
Why would I want to do it anyway?
Oh, me.
In good company.
I totally know what I'm doing.
Hanging out,
and
right?
And does it really matter? You know. But whatever, I don't know.
I trust that you have the resources to work this out.
I think, you know, it's always sort of a little bumpy, and then it's like, oh, okay. I think.
Great love will consume you.
I think that my major difference here is
all of you.
Not experiencing the feeling or the thought of time. So that makes it difficult.
You know, you're feeling it quite enough to say that you're not feeling it.
Okay.
So fuck you, you liar, you poser.
Okay. That's fine.
You know what I mean? I'm speaking to myself, uh-huh. Right? I'm not aiming anything at you.
Let me work on that.
Okay. Right. Any idea that you have of what you think is present or not present or how you're reflecting on it, whether it's space, whether it's time, you're invested in it enough to even have the conclusion. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying you shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. What the hell difference does it make?
It is different, though.
Okay, well,
the
cheerio.
The thing is different. It's just different.
Now, that's an observation. I mean, that's not a complaint, right? That's not a concern.
I wasn't complaining. I'm confused again, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, please, I have no experience of realization.
Yeah.
I have no authority. Nothing ever happened to me. Mm-hmm. If I speak the way I speak, it's because I'm a frustrated thespian and I'm just taking it out on you.
Oh, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm trying to get the message.
Can a man be a thespian?
He's not a man.
Oh. Yeah. I'm a transgender thespian and I'm taking it out on you.
He's a large African American woman in disguise.
So I don't know.
Just,
yeah. Well, there's a quality that I refer to as time that seems to have.
Sure.
It's I don't have the same relationship with it.
That's a lovely observation. I hear you. Without reference, you know, you can't create time. Because your, let's say, presence is the revelation of measurelessness. No bookmark, no reference. Right? No appointment, no disappointment. So it doesn't lend itself well to the imaginary measurement of time. As if when something begins or ends, or whether there's even an elapsing of your present experience. Is there an elapsing of your present experience? Or is it stranger than that? Right?
Is it a question?
Does the mere movement of psychological reference, of inner dialogue, of language, of frames of reference, do they insist on the confidence of an elapsing? Or is it stranger than that? And so, why fight with time? There never was any. Only your imagination created time. Why be so concerned with it? If a new discovery suggests, oh, it might not be the way I thought it was. Why not rest in the way this actually is?
I'm not concerned with the time thing, except for the.
Well, you say you're not concerned, and you give me the big except.
Except for the moments when I'm not really functioning well.
She's not going to get to work on time.
And like a distinct possibility.
Yeah.
Lesser and greater women than you have fallen under the sway of this. Mm. It's your privilege to join them.
You know, it sounds to me like, because you're feeling this as something very, the personality you, I mean, is feeling this as something sort of new. It's, you're not confident, and there's an aspect of disbelief that your life has always taken care of itself, and it can take care of itself, and boiled over water is not a problem. So it's more about trusting that what you saw really is waking. I mean, if what happened to you really is waking up, you either doubt it or you. Or
I'm sure I woke up. I know I woke up. But I feel like this is the place to bring any questions I have,
right,
whether important, whether stupid, doesn't matter.
Right.
This is the place.
What I'm addressing is that you don't seem to have confidence in waking up.
You should charge more.
I understand. I understand that you know that. But you still,
there's
an aspect of not having confidence in it enough to know that. And that's part of the unfoldment.
So
that takes time.
And
it takes time for
it evolves
itself or it manifests itself in different ways for different people.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say probably for everyone, there's a period of it becomes accustomed to seeing itself.
Right. Well, I don't think I'm acclimated. I don't.
It helps to set timer.
No, you to acclimate to anything.
Well, water. I set a timer because I forget.
Alzheimer's
or whatever. But
if you do water, get one of those little hot pots, the thing in the back. It turns off automatically.
Mm.
Let's say you're made out of 10 trillion or 10 to the 10 trillion radiant quarks, none of which have any volition. And that creates a meticulous, highly pixelated, three-dimensional dreamscape,
mm-hmm,
of space, time, and self, and everything that appears. Right? So where does your identity go? If your identity goes with the circumstances and events of what appears to be your corporeal life, well, then you're fucked and you're going to be insecure, as we all have been forever.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're 10 trillion to the 10 trillion radiant quarks with no volition,
gotcha.
Well, then fuck you, fuck me, and fuck this.
That can perform magic at the drop of a dime.
And that's what it's doing. So it depends on where your loyalty is. If your loyalty is with the body and mind and the obligations and the family imagination, which you have, of Pat, then there can be, call it acclimation. But if you're an uncountable number of self, radiant quarks without volition that just dream this,
mm-hmm,
for fun because they don't know what else to do, they can't actually do anything other than dream this for fun,
mm-hmm,
then where's the concern?
Okay. That's what I came here for.
You could be as quirky as you can be around.
Oh, it was the quirk thing. We should have done the quirk thing an hour ago.
Neutrinos.
I had the quirk thing an hour ago.
Oh, I'm sure.
How about the neutrinos coming from the solar escape?
Yeah, an escape neutrinos from Australia.
Nice.
Right. Yeah. So what is this? I mean, is it consciousness? Is consciousness the consequence of a thing? Is this present experience the result of the Big Bang, the Earth, the solar system, the cooling, the ammonia turning into carbon dioxide, nitrogen, oxygen, right? The beatitude of you coming out of the sea, being a terrestrial creature made of, 100 billion cells that each have their own intelligence. What the fuck? Is this the consequence of anything? Or are you, right, the radiant imperative before creation, before time, before volition, It's not the consequence of anything. It doesn't actually beget anything other than itself. That's kind of the invitation. What does this presence reveal to you? Something that's the consequence of something? Something that's about something? Something that has to do with the body, the mind, the content and context of dreaming? Is it about that? Because if it is, then you've got a million avenues to take, right? A million infinities or an infinity of infinities to take in terms of how you dream this through. But if it's not that, then those same infinities are right at your fingertips. You won't pick up a single one. Not a single one of those affinities can afflict you. That'd be fun. I mean, I call that fucking enlightened. That doesn't mean I know what it is, but wow. I'll pull that switch. Give me that sugar packet. There's a million infinities, an infinity of infinities at your fingertips from moment to moment to moment. None of those moments last. And you don't have to lift a finger. And you're not afflicted by a single one of them. Give me some of that juice. Let's say your life falls into a shithole and everyone in your household dies because you burned the place down. Nice work. You know, we'll come to the funeral. We'll probably laugh at it. Everyone will be going, whoa, that was some major tragedy that happened in the borough of Doylestown. We'll be snickering.
You won't go to your own parents' funeral.
I might. I might. Probably will. I probably
He's
would.
All tongue
breaking. He's all tongue.
Shh. Oh, what did I say about saying that? It's so true. It's all talk here. That's it. Bobblehead full of talk.
Yeah. We have that on tape, you know.
There's no suggestion that you should do anything other than imagine your life as you imagine it from moment to moment, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this isn't placing any particular demand on you to experience your experience in any different way, in a unique way, in an enlightened way. It's not. It's not placing any demand on you. Knock yourself out. Be yourself. Inhabit yourself with all the pain and sorrow and suffering and glee and fearlessness and courage from moment to moment as you do. Right? See yourself as a radiant conflagration of valueless quarks, or see yourself as someone in a body as the result of birth that had better defend yourself, or had better keep the clock time together so that you don't burn the house down or lose your job. You could identify with this any way you want, from moment to moment, with full-fledged sincerity, 100% of you. It will be a total fucking dream. You'll enjoy it or you'll suffer it, depending on the resonance of the moment. Is any of it real? Where's the rest of your life prior to this moment now? Where is it? You can't find it. Even surrounded by all the icons of all of the accumulations of your material life, where you live and your clothing and your memories and your car and your stuff and your to-do list and the shit that you hate and the shit that you love, it's all a dream. You can't find any of it. It's weird that right here in the persistent irrefutability that we refer to as one's life, you can't actually find your fucking life because every association's dreamt or like a dream. Isn't that what this experiencing is?
I have some machinations on how the dream occurs.
Of course, why not?
Should I proceed?
Well, I go with the Kraken. Yeah. I like to say it's the Kraken's fault. Ever since they released the Kraken, then this began. But what do you got? Maybe it's a turtle or something.
Know. Okay, here we go. I'll make it fast. So, if you have light and then you have an object, you have a shadow. Okay?
Okay.
So, if you have... what would be the word?
Yes.
What if you have this, then you have the self, then you have the dreaming.
Yeah. Yeah, radiance bounces off of itself and it looks like this. And then it gets confounded. It said, whoa, is that me? That's all it is. Radiance bounces off itself. It looks like this. This is just a giant refraction pattern. And then it gets all excited and said, whoa, is that me? So we call that life. It looks like, oh, that's me. At the same time that radiance understands full well that it had never been other than itself, you could say, without, you know, corporeal or phenomenal expression. Why do they say emptiness is form and form is emptiness? Because this doesn't have a boundary field. It has no quarrel with expressing itself in the way that it does. You could say, right? In the infinity of the known and imagined universe, and it's also nothing at all. It has no quarrel with that either. If you want to assign some kind of priority, chronology, or genesis to a singularity, knock yourself out. It's happy to hear all of these ideas. But the only way to come up with any kind of how-to is to imagine that this is other than itself. If it's not other than itself, then there's no how, there's just this. The permutation of infinity in representation doesn't quit. But it's never not itself, though we don't know what that means, and that's the good news. If we knew what it meant, we'd be fucked again in sorrow. Yeah, because the moment this particularizes, which is so evidenced, well evidenced by the imagination of my life, suffering is its constant companion, right? Apprehension and lack and insufficiency is its constant companion. Try to live without it. But it can also see itself, right, as unencumbered radiance, without volition and without causation, without result. And in seeing it that way, whatever that means, or whatever that means to you, we could argue is the cessation of sorrow, is the cessation of other. Who knows what that's going to do to you, do with you? Who knows? It can't possibly be one thing, though it's one thing.
That's what's amazing to imagine, that the 7 billion... or so, of selves, apparent selves, simultaneous.
Isn't it weird? Talk about a computer, eh? Look at this. It has replicative power so awesome that at least on this small little ball that no one has found yet, perhaps except the blues and the grays, no one else has found it yet, it can create 7-something billion replicative, right, reprints of itself. And each one of those can appear to have a disparate self. So this has never been other than one thing. With the power of magnification, whether it's the telescopic magnification or the microscopic magnification, there's no end of this revealing itself to itself. You're not going to hit a plenum in either direction. You're just not. So that suggests that it has the capacity to dream itself for its own pleasure. In itself, as itself, revealed to itself. Because you're never going to find an end game, whether you go telescopically or microscopically. All you're going to see is just more creation. Gleeful, thrilled, without a destiny, creation that has no duration. Hello? The looking, right, as Jamie said, the me, the looking, that this is creative and reveals itself to itself has a certain kind of persistence. I don't know what else to say about it. And yet all that appears in it is absolutely evaporating, right? Every articulation, every meticulous articulation of the magic of the dream is disappearing and dissolving. And yet it persists in doing this. You're like, knock, knock, who the fuck designed you? Who made this machine? This is like a perpetual motion machine. Feeds on itself inexhaustibly. You want the sorrow train? One's leaving every moment. You've got to pass on the sorrow train. It's leaving every moment. Wow, you'll never be late for the sorrow train. You can't be late for the sorrow train. You want, what was it, Cat Stephen? Youssef? What was that train called?
Peace train.
You want the peace train? Hey, one's leaving every moment. Leaving the stage can't be late for the peace train. Not possible to be late for the peace train. All this is peace train. That's what he said. An Islamic guy. I'm just a Jewish guy. I wouldn't know about that stuff. You want the sorrow train? I'll take your ticket.
No,
you want the peace train?
He was Muslim,
happy to take your ticket. And I'm not saying that your volition even counts in terms of which ticket you hand in, which conductor you go see. Why does it even matter? That would be strange. Mm-hmm. That you're given two tickets, the sorrow train and the peace train. You can get on either train from moment to moment to moment, and you're like, fuck me, I'll just sit on the platform the rest of this. You put your tickets down. You just sit on the platform. Fuck me, this is unbelievable, just sitting on the platform. Who had any idea? I was scrambling to get on the peace train, but I couldn't get off the sorrow train. And then I said, well, fuck it, I'll just sit on the platform.
It occurred to me that sorrow can only exist when there's a reference point of something lost or something not the way you'd like it to be.
That's right. Sorrow is this appearing as other than itself.
So if this illusory possession of some time where I had something and then I didn't, suddenly went poof.
How about now?
Yeah. Then sorrow wouldn't even have a place to land.
Right now, you mean?
Right now.
I'm glad to hear it. Yeah, I'm glad to hear it.
I'm not even conjuring any sorrow. I have no interest in doing so.
Yeah.
Right. But I'm curious at the mechanism.
What about the same story with the peace train?
It would be the same thing, because if you're like eager to get on a peace train, you have a referential point of peace. I could use some of that, right? I mean, it's
betterment.
The other end of the spectrum. Yeah, it's a reference point of, oh, I could use more of that, or no, I don't want that. I don't want the sorrow, I want the peace.
Well, why imagine an entity that makes a choice? Right? I mean, that what you just said was a lovely story. We can all appreciate the metaphor, but why even create an entity that could appear to make a choice?
I kind of like that there is no chooser, even though choosing happens, and that when things get all whacked out, it's not because I made the wrong choice. It's because it's the nature of the unpredictability of this amazing something or other.
That's reporting on stuff that as if something happened before now that was whacked out.
Yeah.
And that you used to like not be happy that it was whacked out, but now maybe you're much more comfortable and admiringly so that it's whacked out.
Oh yeah, before and after.
Before and after is bullshit. Dave? Yeah. You're bullshit. You are total bullshit.
Creating community.
Yeah, that's right. Before. Take an ad out and creating community and say, hey, there's a before and after, and I can help you with the after. I'm Dave.
I take it that was a worthwhile endeavor, then.
Yeah, sure.
They've been pouring in the door ever since.
Well, this, for me, maybe it's just my peculiar personality. You know, it's like, God, ruination, present moment ruination fucking rocks. It just shines my teeth. Present moment ruination is where this at. You can't hang your hat anywhere. Right? You can't rely on anything. You don't have any idolatry. There's nothing left of you. I know it's a little challenging, it's a little awkward to talk in these terms, but give it a whirl. What? Give it a whirl. There's nothing left of you. Present moment ruination is the Brahmanic field. That's the Brahmanic revelation. But even calling it present moment ruination, even that has an association, right? As if there were something here to begin with that could possibly be ruined or fucked with. What if there was never anything that could possibly be ruined or fucked with? As in your present experience. Is it solid enough that it's the result of something? That it has been alterable, should be alterable? Why do you care?
Cell differentiation, like.
That's an imagination. So how could I possibly explain it? The best way to explain it is that anything that you come up with, like soul or differentiation, is just something imagined. You have to first have more than one soul to presume that they've differentiated. And you don't have any evidence for there being more than one soul.
I don't see how souls and cells are the same thing.
Souls and?
Cells. Cell differentiation. Like, if you have like a carbon biology.
Cell differentiation?
And you have a hydrogen cell.
Yeah.
The carbon cell has electrons. The hydrogen cell, I only know the hydrogen has one. I forget how many.
One.
The carbon has, I don't remember.
Are you talking about atoms?
Atoms, yeah. And electrons and the, you know.
Yeah, but that's just the artistry of biology.
They spin in a certain way.
That's just the artistry of physics. It doesn't make it real. It doesn't make it independently real or causative. Cells, microorganisms, organelles, submolecular cells, photons, atoms, molecules, quarks, Higgs bosons, you name it. This is all pageantry. It's a painting. It's imagination. It's imagination that's appearing within the boundless depth of consciousness itself, the boundless depth of radiance itself. Those things are metaphors. They're referential. They're not independently existing. You are not a consequence of relativity. Though differentiation, cellular and otherwise, certainly appear to appear. Nobody has an explanation for this, any of it.
Well, is it possible that that can exist, but like you said, without...
Why not?
Without reference.
Well, all dreaming exists without reference. All dreaming is actually without reference because it's not possible to have a reference. So if you've got a dream, it's a referenceless dream. Maybe that's how this does this. We call it dreaming because it appears to have a reference, but it doesn't really have a reference because this is only referenceless. And that's why we call it dreaming, because if it appears to have a reference, then it looks like, oh, something's going on. There's a subject and an object and an outpouring. Something's occurring. Something's happening. But is anything happening?
Movement? Like wave, particle?
Well, movements from here to there, but there is no here and there is no there. You see, these are fractures of what we call mind, fractures of reference, fractures of language. And you can find plenty of evidence for these so-called fractures, whether you look telescopically or microscopically. You can find more vibration pouring forth in your face, because you're on the other...
Vibration is movement, right?
Okay, let's say that, sure. But even just to say that it's movement doesn't necessarily mean that it's moving, or that it's even still. How fucking strange is this, that you can't assign anything to it that's not already and otherwise not the case? All explanation for what this presently is myth. And you're welcome to an infinity is myth. And you're welcome to an infinity of myth from moment to moment. This is a very sumptuous feast that we're at. It's the buffet killer. This is the buffet killer.
Well, like her, I think I'm grasping for some explanation. Like, there has to be an explanation. Yeah. It could be just these little things, quirks or electrons moving in different ways.
Yeah, but this is not. But this patterns. Is not the consequence of anything, and so there's no explanation for it.
Feel better now.
Huh? Experiencing is so, we don't know what experiencing is. It appears to be persistent because, you know, we don't see it as blinking in and out. There's a certain kind of persistence to it. And yet, in the midst of its persistence, everything that appears in it, including our subjective consciousness, is like a flickering, a disappearing flickering. I mean, at least at a roulette table, you can put your money on a number, and if the number comes up, you can leave the casino with cash. But you can't do that here. And you can't do that here.
Why not?
no roulette table.
That's right. Was that Peter?
There's no roulette table.
I thought this
no
was
roulette
a dice
table.
Group.
Go Lucky 7 all night long.
That was my favorite game, too.
Go Lucky 7 all night long.
My name is Diane, and I'm a compulsive gambler.
7 is lucky.
So I like to use this metaphor of whatever this is or isn't, appearing as if it could possibly be other than itself. The moment, if were there such a thing, that this can appear to be other than itself, then explanation and the entirety of proliferation as phenomena occur. In an instant, off a pinhead, off less than a pinhead. And that's concomitant with the imagination that this could be other than itself, then the entire universe is at your fingertips. But if it's not other than itself, though the proliferation is beyond imagination in every conceivable direction, it's not other than itself. You're not the consequence of anything. This is not about anything. You don't have to explain it, justify it, do anything with it. You don't have to fix your life. Your life sucks. Leave it at that. Really, there's a lot of freedom in it. I mean, I know I'm a wise guy, but
yeah.
Your life sucks. Leave
yeah.
it at that. Because
yeah.
if you're a quark, because if you're a radiant quark and your life sucks, you don't give a fuck. But if you're your life and your life sucks, you're fucked. Your life really sucks. And I didn't make up that rule. You know, it's just a quirky observation.
Well, Peter says, you know, if your life sucks, well, look over there. You know, like, stop trying to fix it and work with it and mess with it. Look over there. I love that. It's like saves you from going down the rabbit hole to fix something that is kind of unfixable.
Well, you see, you might wear that like a cloak or a medicine bag, right? The moment you have a medicine bag, you're fucked in sorrow.
Because
if we're wearing
to make a eulogy of some sort, like, that's just a...
If you're wearing a medicine pouch, you're already in sorrow.
I'm ensconced in them.
Yeah. Okay. So that's cool to see. You happen to be a, right, divine personage with divine mother with a bunch of medicine pouches. Okay. Cool. That's what makes you you. Yeah.
She's proud.
Right. And we all do that, right? We all carry around, God, the whole double vanity of, you know, of remedies, of medicine pouches, so that we can outwit the imagination of suffering.
Yeah.
Good luck with that. This is fucking sweet. It really is. This is this. It doesn't give a shit about you. You don't give a shit about it. Could you find a better relationship?
At least it's honest.
Interestingly, no.
It's a little schizoid. Okay.
Well, that's what you came in with. It's a little schizoid. I kind of like it. If there's a waking up, and God, I hope there's a waking up. I do. I really do. It would have to be this. And the less utility it has to you, the sweeter it is. It's a vampire thing. Climb the mountain of yourself. Go in the hole. Face the beast. Hear the message. Take the leap. Go all the way. Where will that lead you? Here's good. Just about now. Thank you. I'm just an idiot marionette. The master does all the work. His hand is up my spine, and then his mouth moves. That's
your spine is a nice way to put it.
That's it.
We want to know if you're enjoying that. That's what we want to know.
It's a deep it's a deep massage. It's grace. It really is grace. I have no idea what time it is.
Yeah, 9:05.
Oh. Well, typically we go till 9:30. We can, if you like. Anyone that would like to leave prior to then may. And if everyone leaves, then we've all left.
Thanks for your permission.
Yeah, really.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we nailed that, huh? Nailed that fucker. Made that mime.
You guys want to go home?
Cheech and Chong to me, but
yeah, no. Dave's not here.
He left the building, but
yeah. So, for those of you that are joining us for dinner tomorrow, the venue has changed, and for good reason, because one space was claustrophobic, and the other space is not. So, the new space, I understand, is the front room of chambers, right? The front dining room of chambers. On Main Street here, right?
Is that the place we went to eat that last time once?
I don't remember. I don't know the last time I've been in there.
I think so.
Huh?
It's very reasonable there, too.
Like a dinner before.
Really good dinners.
Yeah.
We're not in the back.
Ah, yes. So that's the same place, but we're not in the back. We're in the front, right?
They usually have a band playing.
There's going to be a guitarist coming on at 8:30.
Yeah, not a band.
Acoustic and...
Right.
It's going to be a... Gorgeous.
Cool. It could be wonderful.
It's a nice...
When they're going to turn down the music, it should be low sounding. Not before the guitars, but there will be accommodating.
Worry about
it should
it.
Be good.
I trust you. Yeah. I'll put out...
We'll just eat and listen to the guitar.
I'll put out the word on the email that we've changed the venue.
Thank you.
Yeah, wonderful. And thank you all for your support of... Peter and Lily's visit and the thrill of a weekend retreat and all of the unpredictable, weird, and beautiful shit that accompanies that.
Party!
Because it's a party.
Party time.
It's a cosmic party. We have you to thank. Anything else for shits and giggles?
Take a look at that. And tell me, what does the fox say?
What does the fox say?
Ding,
ding, ding.
You know that song?
I do now.
What does the fox say? Came and went.
Fox says, I will babysit the hens.
Yes.
You know why the early practice of meditation can be so confronting, and why we resist it with such fervor? When you begin a relationship with meditation or any contemplative right gesture that may look anything like it, what you're going to be introduced to is just how profoundly this dreams without your permission. Mm. Just how profoundly consciousness doesn't obey you. That's what you're confronted with. Even in the first time you sit, even if it's for 15 minutes, you are invited to see a silver platter is put before your feet that you see that you're not in control of this, mm-hmm. that this dreams profusely and profoundly. Even if you're a very accomplished yogi, decades of pranayamic in-breath, out-breath, right? Or a Buddhist jhani, who uses the breath as a vehicle for inexplicable bliss, you will see how profusely and profoundly this dreams and how it never seeks your permission or your opinion. To have to confront something that dreams this well, that does not seek your permission or your opinion, puts a crack in the imagination that you are real. that you're static, that you're temporal. It reveals to you just how wonderfully loose and lucid you actually are. That's why we refuse meditation. That's why we refuse it, as in I'll never begin. And that's why it's a vehicle for, right, taking us to depths unimaginable. Though, of course, realization is not contingent upon meditation or the consequence of it. And that's another interesting thing to see, right, after years of meditation. Mm-hmm. One is confronted with profound lucidity and the fact that it's that this is a causal.
Now, this has helped me to realize that I can very easily be full of shit while meditating.
Sweet.
I mean, you know.
And we took your money for that discovery.
Did you?
Well, you donated it. We gave it to Pebble Hill. You can thank Pebble Hill for revealing to you that you're full of shit. Because that's where the money went.
Blah, 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 blah.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I started saying to myself, and my head just goes into it and just like, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. And it's the miracle of you that has...
Francine.
It's the miracle of you that has the...
Can you have my head do that for me?
That has the affection to see that, right? It's the miracle of you, unconditioned, that has the affection and the capacity to see that. It's blah, 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 blah. And in that revelation, you take up less interest in circumstance and event, in anecdotal hysteria. You begin to take up residence in what's true. And thankfully, we can't say what's true, and that's why it's so much fun.
Blah, blah.
Yep, I'm down with that. Totally down with that. Okay, we have a long weekend ahead of us, those of us that are participating in the in dinner and the Saturday and Sunday. Thanks
what
for...
What time is the dinner?
6:30. 6:30 tomorrow night at Chambers.
And we start at 10:30 Saturday.
Saturday morning and Sunday, 10:30 a.m. Be there, don't be square. We have visitors from Syracuse.
You are square.
We have visitors from Toronto. We have visitors from New York.
Cute.
We have local folks.
It's all fitting here.
Yeah, well, with your help or whomever, we're going to move this thing against the wall, so we're going to create more space.
Yeah, I can help with that.
Thank you so much.
I love you all.
It's 10:30 to what time?
4:30, I think.